Hello, and welcome to the Robert A. Heinlein Book Club. In this episode, we will talk about The Menace from Earth, which was published in 1957, which is around the time that Citizen of the Galaxy and Dawn of Summer were published. It was a big year for Heinlein, and he also published another short story, which we'll be looking at next, called The Man Who Traveled in Elephant, which is an interesting kind of, not even science fiction or fantasy, really. I guess it's quasi-fantasy or whatever, but maybe it's more of a meta work. We'll talk about that next. This was originally published in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. It does fit into the future history works. It's very much kind of a sequel to The Green Hills of Earth, although this was published in a different anthology later, an anthology named after the story called The Menace from Earth, which is a good name for a collection. And it's a good name for the story, too. But I think you know, someone maybe picking this up on the store, seeing The Menace from Earth, they might think of something. You almost get the sense of it. You want like a supervillain or something. And that's not at all the story we get. In fact, we just get a little teenage love triangle, but it's not really a love triangle because it's misunderstood. But we got teenage jealousy. And actually, you know what it reminds me of a little bit is Cliff and the Calories. And I think Holly here is essentially Puddin or Podkayne. I mean, her physique's very different than Puddin. Maybe it's closer to Podkayne, I guess, in the look, a young, competent woman with her own ambitions, but maybe a little awkward and a little, you know, not fully confident in herself interpersonally. I think that's certainly the case with Puddin in Cliff and the Calories. And I haven't even read the other Puddin stories, which I hope to do at some point. But if you remember from Cliff and the Calories, Puddin basically feels the need to go on the diet to keep this man that she's interested in. And then if she finds out at the end that she didn't have to, that the man, Cliff, I guess, really actually kind of like put in the way she was and didn't have this desire for her to go on this diet. There's something a little bit similar going on here, although it's set on the moon, with people who kind of grew up on the moon, young people growing up on the moon. And that's why I want to say it's kind of fitting into the Green Hills of Earth thematic of, you know, as humanity ventures out into space, they're going to veer off. I do think Citizen of the Galaxy takes this another step and says, like, you know, humanity, if given enough time, will branch off into 1,000 different manifestations of its culture and attitudes and values and beliefs about herself, even into kind of almost different types. Like, cultures are so radically different that they're almost like incompatible. You know, like, literally one group calling themselves the people and other people calling them not the people, right? But this is in the early stages, so this is again like around those time of those Green Hills of Earth stories where humanity is just venturing out into space. In fact, there's references in the story to the building of the interstellar, maybe interplanetary ships. The spaceships were still being built. This is still the first human encounter. And The Menace from Earth is just how this young woman, and she's 15, but she's already got like a career plan for herself. She's already working. She's super, super competent at what she does. She has ambitions. She's very much a Heinleinian character, and she would have fit into the juveniles very easily as someone like the women in the young women in the Heinlein juveniles are just as competent as the young men, and they're often more memorable characters. Holly here is very much in that vein. So the menace is just this Earth tourist who turns out to be kind of like a low level, like a B actress or something, who looks pretty. This is very beautiful. She looks much younger than her age. Now, about her age, we're finding out at the end that she's like twice their age, or she says, "I'm old enough to be your mother." So assuming people aren't having kids at 15. She's well over 30 by this point, right? So 35. But to Holly's eyes, and just starting to get to Jeff, the crush she has, she kind of sees Jeff not really as her boyfriend, but as a future partner for sure. And there is an affection between them. So it's enough to build these feelings of jealousy when this woman comes. But she's like 35 or 40, but she still looks young because she is this actress. Now, we know that people on the moon age slower. We know that's from Hazel Stone, who's over 100 years old, right? And we know that from other stories, that some of the low gravity on the moon allows people to live longer natural lives. But I think when they say Holly's 15, they mean like in I guess Earth years. I suppose the moon lunar year is essentially the same, right? Because it's going around the Earth, so not much difference there. But it's really a gravity thing. So how, I guess they just grow up normally and then they're just able to live their adult life healthier and youthful for longer. So whatever to make of it, but it's that's not what her young age seems to be about, or Ariel, this tourist woman's young age seems to be about. It seems to be more about her fact that she's kind of an actress and she has to continue to look good. Let's talk about Holly and her job. So she's trying to become work on the starships. That's her job. So she wants to be this venturing out into space more. She's very much of the moon. This is her homeland. She's used to its gravity and it's navigating the city. There's a wonderful description of this vertical underground city in that Luna City is, and that it's like a map doesn't do it good. You need like a 3D map to find your way around. And so the tourists all need guides, or they'll just get lost. Or killed, or something horrible will happen to them. So that's what Holly's doing to make ends meet during her youth. She shows these tourists around, shows around the city, makes sure they don't get lost, shows them a good time, takes them to the tourist sites, lets them do the hang gliding thing. Now she can do like wings, so the moon people. I keep forgetting their name. I always want to call them lunatics. That's what Philip Dick called them. But the Lunites, the Lunars, they have actually wings that they attach that they learn to use, and they can fly in these valleys or these kind of canyons under the surface with the low gravity and these wind tunnel things that appear there. They can kind of fly around in there. The tourists can only kind of use hang gliders, like lame hang gliders. You can imagine what they look like. But anyways, that's the setup of the story. We learned quite a lot about Holly and Jeff's relationship and Holly's relationship with other friends. And everyone knows that Holly has this huge crush on Jeff. She denies it because they're little teenagers and they can't really face their feelings fully yet, and they're not fully honest with them. So as mature as they are in terms of their career and their ambitions and their the way they envision their what their future is going to be, in terms of their interpersonal relationships, they're just like any other teenagers and very jelly, very concerned about. At least Holly is very, very concerned. It's Holly's point of view that we get, concerned about this Ariel who comes and kind of steals Jeff's attention away from Holly. And then Holly has this job to kind of drag her around, and she feels kind of out of place about that aspect of it. That's essentially the story we get. But what I like about this story is we get a lot of details of just what life on the moon is like. We've gotten piecing that together, but if you read all these stories together, along with the Green Hills of Earth, you really do have this picture of a diverging, different human culture, where like these people fly and they live in this complex three-dimensional city, so they think in a more dense, blocky way, I suppose. They think more. they don't think in flat fields. They don't feel think in terms of the green hills of Earth, kind of this sprawling landscape. They think in a more of a in a vertical way. Their entertainment is kind of vertical, which is it's kind of cool. That's what Holly and Jeff like to do is they fly with these wings, and Holly's gone through several of them, so she does it a lot. And then to make her money, she does this touring of the tourists around, and that's just kind of her job. But she's overwhelmed with this feeling of jealousy throughout the story. So we get this, like, I'll give you an example of the dialogue here that suggests how Holly's not able to fully face or confront her feelings. Her character strengths, you know, kind of fall away when she's with Jeff. So Holly says, Jeff, there are so many tourists. Let me think. Tall girl, blonde, extremely pretty. He's talking about Ariel Brentwood. And of course, Holly knows about her, but she doesn't really want to admit it. He grinned like a goof and almost pushed him off. That's Ariel. I recall her. She expected me to carry her bags, but you don't need help, Jeff. She seemed very clever, good sense of balance. Oh, yeah, sure, all that. Well, the fact is, I want the two of you to know each other. She's just wonderful, Holly. A real person all the way through. You'll love her when you know her better. This seemed like a good chance. I felt dizzy. Why, that's very thoughtful, Jeff, but I doubt if she wants to know me better. I'm just a servant she hired. You know groundhogs. But she's not like an ordinary groundhog, and she wants to know you better, she told me. After you told me to think so, I muttered. But I had talked myself into a corner. If it had not happened upon by polite upbringing, I would have said, on your way, vacuum skull, I'm not interested in your groundhog friends. But what did I say? What I did say was, okay, Jeff, and gathered the fox to my bosom and dropped off into a glide. So that sets up her teaching Ariel Brentwood to fly, first with these hang gliders, and then later on she actually is talked into training her on the wings. But what this dialogue tells us is just how both of them are kind of incapable of talking about their feelings for each other and Ariel. And her intense jealousy really comes through because we get her point of view, but Jeff's a little too dumb to notice that, and Ariel's a little bit too dumb to notice that Jeff's kind of smitten with Ariel, but that his true feelings are with Holly, right? And it's only proven with a crisis. Now, when that comes, it's kind of once again another thing we've seen in the Heinlein juveniles again and again, is where a young person kind of has to save the day from some crisis that comes. They're not lost in the woods. They're not lost in a crater somewhere. It's actually more logically derived from the story. It's not just something added in to allow our heroic moment. What happens is Holly is training Ariel on the wings in the canyon, learning to fly. Ariel herself is kind of, you know, fairly competent. They both have their own perspective of her. Like Ariel or Holly sees Ariel kind of as annoying. Of course, right away she's kind of jealous of how she looks because Holly is kind of scrawny and, you know, doesn't see herself as attractive or appealing, but Ariel's this bombshell, a menace, right? A menace from Earth. And and Jeff has this kind of really silly juvenile fascination for this woman who ends up being like a MILF, completely out of his league and not really practical. There's no way Ariel's going to like hook up with him in any way, so it's just a youthful kind of passion. That's something, that's the kind of thing that young people have to grow out of if they're going to like have mature normal relationships with normal people their age, right? So Holly teaches her to fly, and they're doing well, but then there's an accident, and Ariel's about to crash, and Holly moves into action, does her job as a servant, as a guard, as a trainer, and protects her from a fall, uses her skill to land under her, protect her from the fall, doing so breaking her limbs, going unconscious. She wakes up later in the hospital, and then that's when Ariel talks to her privately and says, like, we have to talk about Jeff. you clearly have feelings for him. He clearly has feelings for you. I see it. I don't know why you guys can't see it or discuss it. And then, you know, Holly is very passive aggressive, kind of annoying about it, saying, "It's like, yeah, I don't believe that. You know, everyone knows you're going to end up together. Well, just take him and leave me alone." That kind of whiny, petulant response to that. But eventually, Ariel talks her down and says, "You know, by the way, I'm like 50 years old, I'm old enough to be your parents. I just look this way because it's my job to look this way. And, you know, we're never going to end up together. I'm going back to Earth. You don't have to worry about me." And then she says, "One more thing you don't know is, like, when you were unconscious, he did not run to me to protect me, even though I was also, like, in danger. He ran to you and held you and cried over you and you know, expressed his love for you in that way when the moment came." She says, "Jeff arrived like an avenging angel, split second behind us. He was ripping his wings off as he hit, getting his arms free. He didn't even look at me. He just stepped across me and picked you up and cradled you in his arms, all the while bawling his eyes out." So that resolves the menace from Earth. Ariel says, like, "I'm done with the moon. I'm going back to Earth, you know, be in my B-movies or whatever." And then Ariel and Jeff kind of begin to plan a future together, even thinking what their firm could sound like, you know, Hard C and Hard C has more rhythm than Jones and Hard C, suggesting that they're going to get married in the future. So, I mean, I think the big theme of the story obviously is youthful romance and the follies of it and how young men can be easily distracted by a pretty young thing, or young in quotation marks, something different, and how they need to learn to be honest about who they are and who they're meant to be with. But also, I think that it's all symbolic of the divergence of Earth and the moon. Like, Ariel can visit the moon, she can play around, she can be a tourist, but she can never be part of the moon. And it's going to be the moon people will understand each other and can truly build something together. It's not going to be something that someone from the outside can really embrace. So that is the story. I think this one's really nice. You know, as one of the later Heinlein stories, we don't have many left. And I think this might be the last of this type that's kind of dealing with the moon-Earth dynamic before we get to, like, Moon as the Harsh Mistress. Although I don't know that for sure. I should double check. We have two, three stories left. So Search Life. I guess Search Life is future history, too. But a blind girl who crashes on the moon. So maybe we'll see some of these themes in Searchlight, which we won't look at for a few months, probably at least. I think we get to around the time of Stranger in the Strangeland, we'll look at Searchlight. And we got The Man Who Traveled in Elephants, which is just like a retired people quasi-fantasy kind of thing. All you zombies is time travel. So I think that's all we have left for stories. Yeah, I think this kind of does. We'll see what Searchlight has to say, but I think this is kind of closing a chapter in Heinlein's career in a way. At least until we get to The Moon as a Harsh Mistress, which of course maybe is hopefully I hope is going to pull together a lot of these themes that's been explored in these short stories. I have read it several years ago, so, but it will be it's been a while since I've read that. So next episode, we'll talk about that story I just mentioned, The Man Who Traveled in Elephants, before getting to Half Spaceshoot Will Travel, the last of the Heinlein juveniles. So that is going to be it for now. Thanks for listening. Let me know what you think of this story. If you have any comments or if this story was of interest to you, let me know what you thought of it. I think it's sweet. I think it's nice. I think I actually seem to like I like Heinlein's women and the young women he portrays in his stories. I think they're often more interesting than the young men. So anyways, let me know what you think. Thanks for listening. See you next time.